Ms. Scott has been a research analyst at the RAND Corporation for the last 6 years, during which time her work has focused on neighborhood characteristics and health behaviors. She has authored and co-authored a series of 8 publications on this topic and serves as a reviewer for a related manuscript, or related manuscripts for preventive medicine. She holds a Master's of Public Policy from UCLA with a concentration in community and economic development.
Good afternoon. It's kind of nice that I follow. The professor was talking about all the assignment of individual responsibility since I concentrate on neighborhood cues and neighborhood influences on health behaviors. So I think it's kind of a good follow-up, actually. So my presentation is entitled Marketing Unhealthy Products, Outdoor Ads in Southern Louisiana and Los Angeles. I don't have any disclosures. And the background for this is that we know sort of anecdotally that the kind of ads or just the presence of outdoor ads is not equally distributed across all different kinds of neighborhoods. And a lot of research was done around this topic in the 90s in particular in cities like Chicago and San Francisco, New York, Boston, a lot of major cities. And they found some pretty consistent things that, for example, low-income neighborhoods are more likely to have tobacco ads and have more of them. And minority neighborhoods have more billboards across the board, and as well, those ads are disproportionately for alcohol and tobacco. And so there was a lot of community organization around some of the research that was done. And in the result of that were, you know, several different policy changes. And obviously there was a lot of organization around tobacco. One of the features of the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement was basically a ban on billboard advertising for tobacco and also a ban on placements on like transit furniture. So that's one thing that came out, is trying to control some of the over advertising in certain neighborhoods. And then as well, a lot of neighborhoods had organized and had local laws passed that had a 1,000-foot perimeter around schools and playgrounds, for example. And that was actually stricken down by the Supreme Court in, I think, the year 2000. And in response to that, trying to kind of control, you know, or maintain good neighborhood relations, the Outdoor Advertising Association of America and the Distilled Spirits Council and the Beer Institute all got together and they said, okay, we're going to not advertise within 500 feet of parks, schools, and churches, right? So it's a voluntary thing, but they're like, we know we're going to control ourselves and we're not going to advertise, so we're not going to target children. So our question was, does the compliance with these guidelines depend on the type of neighborhood in which the ads appear? And so the background of this is this: the data from this comes from a larger epidemiological study on health behaviors and adults' neighborhoods in pre-Katrina, southern Louisiana, and Los Angeles County, and they're all urbanized census tracts. So data collection consisted of people literally walking the streets in all of these different randomly selected tracts, and they would walk through every street in that tract and write down when they found and some sort of outdoor ad, and that can be anything from a billboard to a transit ad to a poster to a flyer to any of those things. And they would record both the type of advertisement, the kind of product that was it was advertising, and the number of times that appeared at that location. Anything that was on the outside, right? And then we also looked at, we gathered data on the parks and schools and churches that were located in those neighborhoods as well. So we had data that was available through ESRI, and we took, we calculated the number of churches that were in the tract, as well as the number of schools, and then the number of parks that the tract had contact with as well. And then we classified street structure because you'd suppose that, you know, most advertisements would be on a main street, right, because you're thinking that they would have traffic. In some places, you know, off freeways, you might expect billboards to be zoned for those areas, and we wanted to kind of control for some of the transportational attractions for different kinds of outdoor advertising. And we had three different classifications, basically, you know, whether there was a freeway at all present in the tract, and then the number of miles of, like, major streets or highways, which are very wide streets but maybe have lights, like in a lot of places in southern Louisiana, that was probably more common than freeways, and then just regular arterial streets. We also controlled for city jurisdiction because, you know, local policy, you know, grants permits for outdoor advertising or has local regulations for how they can do things. We wanted to control for that. And then we wanted to control for the socio-demographics of the different tracts as well. So we took into account racial composition, median household income, population density. You're thinking you're trying to maximize the number of people you're reaching. And also the percentage of residents who were youth or people under the age of 18. And this is sort of a description of the tracts themselves. In Los Angeles, there was a much higher percentage of tracts that were majority-minority, or you know, folks who were not white Caucasians. But there was no difference in the median household income in the tracts between those two sites. But the population density was, again, much higher in Los Angeles, and the street structures were very different as well. In southern Louisiana, there were larger tracts. You tended to have more of those sort of major roadways instead of freeways. And there were, in general, more schools and more churches in Louisiana tracts. And so this is a description of the ads that we found in Los Angeles. Let me see here. About 7% of the ads in Los Angeles advertise alcohol, and about 4% advertise tobacco, and they represented you know, a pretty small amount of the total amount of outdoor advertising. Part of that is the amount of advertising that goes into entertainment in Los Angeles. There's just a lot more ads, and if you look at the total ads between Los Angeles and Louisiana, much higher in L.A. But you do see that, for example, 98% of tobacco ads are in compliance. That they were in these small formats, the posters and flyers. There's only a small percentage of actually transit and shelter ads that were for tobacco. But with that, you see a lot of high-frequency small ads. So you have one in three is posted more than one time in any single location. And you also see that 32% of all alcohol ads and 22% of all tobacco ads are near churches, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then in Louisiana, this is pretty shocking, actually, that 22% of all the outdoor ads were for tobacco, and 5% were for alcohol. And one in four ads, a little bit more than one in four tobacco ads, did not comply with the MSA. And we see here that, you know, 89% of the small ads that are out there are being posted multiple times in any one location. And again, you see sort of a clustering of tobacco ads around, more likely to be around schools, and alcohol ads are more likely than other products to be near churches. So if we look at the initial distribution of the things that are correlated with just ads in general, you see that in Louisiana, track sociodemographics are unrelated to the presence of alcohol or tobacco ads. And in Los Angeles, low-income tracts were 47% more likely to have outdoor ads for alcohol, and minority tracts were 37% more likely to have outdoor tobacco ads. And these are fully controlled multi-level models. And so when we try to predict compliance with the MSA, you see in Los Angeles that high-density tracts had 4% fewer violations than otherwise similar tracts. And Louisiana city jurisdiction explained 55% of the variance, which was kind of interesting. So, you know, you have a lot of local politics and a lot of local dynamics going on, and each additional mile of a major roadway was associated with 4% more violations. So they tend to be more along those major roadways, and those are not present in Los Angeles in the same degree. So there are several problems with the MSA when you think about trying to deal with compliance or efficiently make companies comply. One is that the MSA had no mechanism for monitoring and enforcement So there's no agency that is given the responsibility for monitoring what's happening. And only the Attorney General can enforce the MSA. And the Attorney General obviously covers the whole state, has no staff to be out there. So local agencies are not empowered to make folks comply. So there's a huge problem with scope and cost. And one of the interesting things about the chain or the restrictions on the kinds of tobacco ads that that are now legal under the MSA is that one thing that could be happening is tobacco companies could actually be substituting, and rather than having like big billboards, you have like all these small high-frequency ads. And in that sense, you're more locally targeting folks who live in the neighborhood than you might otherwise be. And it's actually closer to sales conversion if it's on the ground and you're targeting pedestrians and you have lots of ads on the ground. So it's interesting. It's not a longitudinal study, so we can't say that it's an effect of the enforcement or the passing of the MSA, or the rule, I can't say that, the settlement. But it's kind of an interesting sort of possible side effect of what has happened. As far as respecting the 500-foot perimeter around schools and churches and playgrounds, see in Los Angeles that, again, low-income status associated with 40% more billboards in violation. That's just billboards. And that freeways are also associated with 40% more billboards in violation. Kind of like the no man's land, you know. When you build a freeway, the area around that area, people don't feel ownership over. You can kind of see that effect. And then each additional church was associated with 6% more billboards, 5% more transit ads, posters, banners, and flyers. So maybe they don't think that anyone's paying attention to what's happening around churches, or there are more adults there to target, and they find that attractive. And in southern Louisiana, again, city jurisdiction was very important, and road structure. So I think there's some different dynamics going on regionally, depending on the design of communities and how people are being reached by advertisers. So the question is, you know, whether the 500-foot perimeter can actually be effective if it's a voluntary thing. And the problem is that the public isn't informed of the guidelines, that they even exist, and it's really unclear where to direct complaints, even if you're upset about it. But it's interesting because there's some degree of self-regulation of alcohol ads because they have this 70% placement requirement that they self-monitor on, which means that if they have a print ad or an ad on TV, they have to check and see what the audience is and determine if they have 70% or more adults in that audience. But for outdoor advertising, the only thing they're required to report is total expenditures, but it doesn't tell you anything about where that ad is being placed. And so the 70% threshold has actually been fairly successful in controlling the amount of exposure of children to print, TV, and traditional sort of media ads. But one possible strategy would be is trying to expand that to outdoor and actually have some sort of accountability for placement in outdoor ads. So that's it.
Okay, we have our final presentation, then we'll have time for questions.